help somebody in the STEP program, right? I mean, some of these are individual, you know, Jerry Vanderpool of McGrath got $378.
Right.
That's equipment, clothing, training, something to get a job, I assume. And I can understand all those. The ones I'm curious about are the ones that are outside of the state of Alaska. Sounds like Lamar Cotton may have an answer.
OJT, on-the-job training performed in the state by...
I'm Lamar Cotton, the Deputy Commissioner of Human Affairs. With respect to your question, Mr. Chairman, Golden Age is a partner with the CDQ group, I believe, out of the North Sound area. No, not the North Sound, it's another area. It's one of the CDQ partners.
So their location in Seattle may have nothing to do with where the work was performed and where the training occurred. So they employed people in the fisheries on a processor or something what they own, and their base may be in Seattle, but it's probably all done in Alaska.
Right.
Okay, I can understand that one. What about the other ones? Is that the case on all of them? I mean, you've got West Coast training of Milwaukee, Oregon. You've got communication skills of somewhere in Alabama. Robert Armstrong of Lakewood, Oregon. Sears of Atlanta, Georgia. And it may be that the person bought equipment there for a job in Alaska, and they were in Alaska. I just, whenever I see outside numbers, I say,
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad you're very observant on this, and the answer to that question is, in some of these cases, exactly what you said. They may be located, their home office may be somewhere else. In other case instances, it may be that the training is not available in Alaska, and the monies are funded through whether it's books or plane tickets, airfares, to send that individual for specialized training or training that's not available in Alaska, to send them to these areas where they can get that training. And I guess your next question would be, well, how much is that of what would we pay? Is that, you know, room and board? Is that lodging, food, Friday nights out?
And if I could interject something, Mr. Chairman, and the bottom line is this training is provided, and the monies are provided to those people who qualify for STEP funds, those people who have an attachment to the Alaska UI Trust Fund.
Senator Frank?
So down at the bottom of the list, the last one is First National Bank of Anchorage. Now, and they got $464 for providing some training to one of their employees. Is that right, or what would that have been for?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it would be to one of their employees. It would be to someone probably who was has contributed to the UI Trust Fund that wanted to receive training in the banking area. Wouldn't necessarily be an employee of the bank that's receiving this. It was someone who was unemployed who wanted to receive some training in the banking industry. And this may right. And the First National Bank of Anchorage provided the training.
Oh, I see.
So they may have got computer training on an escrow tracking program or something or other from First National and First
upgrading
National.
upgrading their skills for. Yep.
Okay, so, and then they may or may not have been at the time a First National Bank employee.
They would have to be unemployed.
Right. They're unemployed.
Nobody unemployed. When I said they would increase
their jobs. Oh, I thought we had on-the-job training.
That's the other program. That's a JTPA program, the federal program, Job Training Partnership Act program.
I see. Okay. So why wouldn't every employer take advantage of these funds to train their new hires?
Through the chair, these are not on the job training types of funds.
That's what I mean, though. I mean, I understand that, but why wouldn't every employer say, well, before you come to work for us, you have to go through this training program? It takes 3 weeks, and by the way, you don't get paid. And it's fortunate that we can get some money from the state to provide the training. and, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, it doesn't seem like that would be the target to subsidize, you know, businesses that are in the, you know, in the habit of training people already. I don't know. I'm just wondering about that.
Aren't these people more displaced workers and that's they're looking for other...
Well, in the list, it shows all kinds of services provided. Classroom training, OJT, relocation assistance, tools, work clothes, safety equipment, travel, supportive services. All those things are parts of the list of what the program actually provides. But the total of this list is only... The total of the breakdown list that I have here is 142,000 on individual referrals. And then subgrants is 865,000.
Right.
For a total of 1 million.
Yes. That was the total. That's the actual expenditures in FY95.
Okay.
In the statewide service delivery area only.
Okay, so that's $1 million.
Right.
Now, if we take, where do we break that across to the fiscal note?
Oh. The fiscal note is an estimate of what the FY97 expenditures will be based on the amount of money that is being RSA'd to Community Regional Affairs by Department of Labor.
And that number is how much?
I think it's 3333.6.
So this is a tripling of the size of the program?
No, what you have, the FY95 that you were looking at for the $1 million was only the statewide service delivery area. You'll also have to take in consideration the Anchorage service delivery area, and the FY95 actual expenditures for that area were $731,000. And then in the Fairbanks service delivery area for FY95, the actual expenditures were $170,000 approximately. But there are, as my understanding is that there are more funds that are becoming available for the program. So there is an increase in the funding available.
But the increase is basically just the percentage of the weight scale, the 0.1% or whatever, the small rake-off on everything that goes through unemployment.
Right, that's correct. And then anything that is unspent, I believe, goes back to the UI trust fund.
Right. Lapsed funds go back to the trust fund. So if it isn't spent that year, it goes back into the trust.
Questions? Senator Frank.
So, like, now I'm looking at reliable transfer down here in Juneau. They probably provided somebody training in truck driving or something? Or?
Well, they actually also may have moved somebody because moving allowances.
Well, that particular case, through the chair, that was probably relocation expenses. Actual, not training, that was probably payment of expenses someone moved.
Where do you go to find out about this stuff? I mean, if you're an unemployed, where is your point of entry?
In our, through the chair, Senator Frank, our field office, well, we have, number one, we have a number of brochures that we use to advertise the various programs in DCRA. This STEP program is just one of the programs that's included in the brochure that talks about job training, STEP program, all the other programs that we have. And we provide these services through all of our field offices as well.
In addition to that, Senator, we have, with our partnership, for example, in the jobs program, Let's Go Work program, we have, when we deal with welfare recipients, our counselors are aware of this program. When people are not available for or not eligible for federal funds, that would be another source of funds. Also, our employment service employees in our 19 field offices also are aware of this program and will take it into consideration when they deal with the unemployed who need.
You'd actually give the direct service delivery under this program? No.
No, but we can direct.
To refer
we can direct
to another
our
program,
yes.
To
yes.
A training program of some sort, and then who would handle the payment for transfer? And you guys, or that
Community Regional Affairs? We'd handle the payment to the grantee, and the grantee would disperse. But there are a couple of pilot projects, I believe, that where the Department of Labor did provide some direct services.
Say that again.
There were a couple of pilot projects, I believe, in FY95, the Department of Labor actually did perform the direct services themselves.
Other questions? Senator Frank.
I don't know if you responded to my question about whether a company could get in the habit of, it may not be a bad habit, I don't know, just taking people that were eligible for this program, unemployed, needed some training before they could be properly, functioning in their job for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or whatever, and didn't pay them for that time, but ran them through a training program and were, in fact, reimbursed for the cost of having their supervisor. Let's say you're the Bergman Hotel and you need four new maids for the coming season or something. I'm just thinking out loud.
Sure.
Okay? You say, okay, you've never been a maid before. You don't know what it entails. You're unemployed. It's going to take you about a week to learn this, how to do everything you're supposed to. And there's four of us here, and this one person that is an employee of ours is going to train you for a week, and we're going to get a grant from the state to pay that person training you. I mean, they don't know that, but, that in fact, would that type of thing be eligible?
I'm trying to answer this. You guys correct me if I'm wrong. I would think it would be, provided that that individual was an eligible person that had contributed to the unemployment insurance fund, and then I think that they would very well qualify and could do that. I don't see any problem with that at all.
I mean, the choice is that they go through that, they get the money, and then the person doesn't get a job and is still back on UI. So, I can see your comment that, and it may be that
before, if we didn't have this program, hotel's still going to have to pay to train the person, and they're probably going to pay them while they're training them because they probably have to.
I'll bet that the people that once they figure this program out, if you run a program and you hire seasonal employees like Quinaha Landing Hotel and King Salmon does, which shows $11,000, they probably use it for a training program. But then the other question is, if they use it for a training program and they hire people off of unemployment insurance, what's wrong with that?
For that particular training, I would certainly take advantage of the JTPA funds, because there you have on-the-job training in, and the employer only has to pay 50% of the wages. And
yeah, that's true.
Well, okay. They probably do this one, and then they do that one in the first. And the people that know how to work the system.
Yeah, there are a lot of opportunities for people to. I don't know if that's abuse or not, but it's.
Well, Senator, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Helfert alluded to it, and that is we're trying through these programs to get people from welfare to work. And if this is a way, and the unique thing about this STEP program is we all help pay for it.
You contradicted yourself there, because when I asked you earlier about the welfare recipient that hasn't worked in 3 years, you said, no, this is for people that have worked and they're temporarily down on their luck and haven't got a job.
They may be on welfare, but that doesn't mean they've been out of work for 3 years before they got on welfare. People lose jobs and they get foreclosed on their house and they can't keep up with,
all right,
their obligations.
I stand corrected.
But just to finalize what I was saying was that, when we do that, we're trying to get people off the welfare rolls and to work to make them productive members of society. And most people want to work. They fall through the cracks. Extended unemployment benefits go out. And there's a lot of people out there that just are wanting to be given a chance. If they can get that little boost by Alaskans helping Alaskans through this 0.1%, we're helping each other.
What would be wrong with extending it then, and on that thesis, to people that weren't, that were longer term unemployed?
If I could supplement something Dwight said, Senator, through the chair, not every employer or employee or occupation is eligible to receive STEP funds just because they have an attachment to the labor force. What this program also requires is that we target We target those occupations that are first and foremost taken by non-residents, and that comes from our annual non-resident hire report. So it's, you know, I mean, it's just not a convenient, it's not a convenient training mechanism. It's a mechanism that is meant to target those occupations and those industries that tend to hire non-residents. And then the money is dispersed by area dependent on where those occupations are and where those industries are who tend to hire non-residents, those industries that have high unemployment. So it's a combination. It's a combination of an attachment, an employee's attachment to the trust fund, and those occupations and those industries where Alaska needs to make an inroad in hiring residents. So it is a combination.
Senator Sharp.
I think it's a good program because the first guy that come to lobby me after I was elected to be a legislator was the then Commissioner of Labor, who is our borough mayor right now, and said it was a hell of a good program, and here we are up to renew it now. So.
I'm not too sure if he received funds to have the job he has now, though.
I see the North Star Borough on here a few times.
Well, at least he's doing a job for you, Senator.
Got a question over here. Well, I think it works. Senator Donnelly.
Can I move the bill with individual recommendations?
Well, I don't know. We were just going to talk about it a little longer.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
White's dissertation is
not. I would like to see it. I would like to see if there's valid training programs that could be. I wouldn't want them to be excluded if they served longer-term unemployed as well.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frank, I fully well...
Because of the effort to get people off of welfare is not only in this bill, but it's in the last bill we dealt with, too. And I don't know. We've had situations where grantees have been, or potential recipients have been denied because they don't, target mostly recently employed, unemployed people. And I think that it seems to me that you've got all kinds of different grantees in here, and I don't know why you would have to exclude those.
Don't the sub-grants apply to anybody?
Pardon, Senator?
What was the question?
Well, what about this? Don't the sub-grants apply to anybody, whether they're in the three-year thing or not? Like the training programs and all the education programs, they're all just within the 3 years, too?
If you haven't worked for 4 years, you can't fall under.
Yes, the reason behind that is because it's the employees who are paying for this program.
I understand that, but that doesn't change the assessment on the employees or anything. It's not going to change the percentage.
If I understand the senator, I think what he's basically stating is that why exclude those people that haven't worked for 3 years? If someone hasn't contributed for 6 years and they want to get the training, is there any way that they could still, this could be modified so they could still receive the training? I don't know how was the three years an arbitrary number? How did the three-year number come about? I don't know. I don't want to change the subject, but I did want to answer other question that you asked earlier on the OJT. I'm just looking at this, and this particular program also can be used for the OJT, where the step funds can be used to pay 50% of that person that receives the training, on-the-job training, but the employer has to commit up front that they're going to hire the person after the training's completed. But the other
Senator
question.
Donnelly.
I have a motion pending.
Motion is to move the bill with individual recommendations. Are there objections?
Well, I would like to see that broadened a little bit, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frank, I say this grudgingly, but because I would like to see it moved tonight, but if it is the intent that you want to know what, we would have to find out what the if there is a negative effect on the trust, how that might affect that. We have to, you know.
Just, it would mean that you would have a broader pool of potential grant recipients or grant recipients and agencies that would be able to access the funds. And I'm not sure if you've used up all the funds each year or you've had some carry forward or carry. Have they all been used?
Have all the funds been used?
No, and that's what I was just explaining to Ms. Williams. I'm not the program person, but I would think that would be a good amendment because all the funds aren't being spent right now. They're going back to the UI Trust Funds. And this might, like as you say, expand the pool, and then we might spend all the funds available that have been authorized because we haven't done that yet.
For example, if you change the 3-year to 4-year, you'd increase by that much, or is that what you're thinking of, Senator Frank?
Well, I'm thinking of people. If you've got a qualified program that helps people get training, that may target maybe the long-term unemployed even. And they're demonstrably doing a good job. I wouldn't want them to be disqualified for this program. And I don't know how tight your regulations are for making sure. I don't want a fly-by-night situation. I don't want any fraud or scam or anything. But it seems with all the effort that we have to reduce welfare rolls that we've got a program that isn't using all the money that's available. And it just seems like an arbitrary thing to say, okay, you're going to exclude those that are structurally unemployed, you know, that they haven't worked. I don't know where the language would be. I don't know that if you went for 4 years, whether you'd really pick it up or whether you just need to change some of the other language.
You think this successful program is strong enough that it might be able to help some of the other failures?
No, I don't.
Where would that be, on line 21, page 3, or would that do it? That's the only place I see 3 years in here.
Mr. Chairman, I would feel more comfortable going to our actuarial and finding out what the effect of extending the qualifying years would do to the UI Trust Fund. I would be more comfortable doing that.
It's a trust fund issue.
Keeping in mind that the farther we...
It doesn't increase the assessment because the money goes into the pot irrespective of how much comes out and is used to serve.
Because it's a fairly small pot of money and because it's a fairly small pool of people. The more you broaden the group of people, the more effect it is going to have on...
You'd be worried that you wouldn't be able to serve those that you're currently serving. Right.
That's one worry, yes, and also that the bigger that, yes, absolutely.
Because you're not changing the percentage that goes in, so it'd only be how you spread what comes out.
Well, yes, and also and the effect of getting immediately unemployed people back to work so that they minimize the
right.
effect.
Right. I know that, and I appreciate that. I'm not
okay.
trying to.
Senator Frank, if you want to come up with something, we'll try and Senator Donnelly, if you don't mind, we'll deal with it in the morning.
Sure, I'll withdraw my motion.
Pardon?
I'll withdraw the motion.
Thank you. If we have time, let's try and do one more bill, if the committee will tolerate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Senator Frank, I will work on that.
Okay.
See you tomorrow.
All right. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's
we'll
a year.
We'll hold this over until tomorrow, then. Good morning.
Yep.
Thanks, sir.
What time are we going to start at morning? 9?
We're scheduled for 8:30. We announced 8:30 on the floor.
We're going to get our dinner.
Senate Bill 301.
301.
How you doing?
What's quite a bit of.
Hey? Is there any controversy in it?
What does this do?
It's anticipating.
Okay. The easier it is, the quicker it is to get.
Yeah.
Okay, Senate Bill 301.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Green.
We considered the executive order earlier in the session concerning post-secondary education. There were a couple of things that we preferred to do through legislation, and one of those that there were some obsolete and outdated federal requirements that were being transferred from one agency to another, and by doing legislation we can repeal those. The second one was, in by virtue of the executive order, it was felt that the legislature would lose oversight at any ability to confirm board members, and we believe that the legislature should retain some control of the individuals who are making financial decisions affecting so many of our Alaskan students. We incorporated those provisions from the executive order, and we've used as many of the provisions from the executive order as possible while correcting the two problems mentioned above. Basically, we moved the Alaska Student Loan Corporation from the Department of Education to the Department of Revenue, transferred the functions of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. We've attempted to change the corporation board to eliminate the special interest and create a majority of public members in addition to the minority of commissioners on the board. The legislative confirmation process will be continued, and some new provision are, many of which are considered more technical. There's a requirement that the corporation establish separate accounts for the Teacher Scholarship Revolving Loan Fund and our account and the Family Education Loan Account. There's one correction to Senate Bill 123 where the prorate the share for the full-time undergraduate and the relationship to the half-time graduate student and the half-time undergrad student. Their respective amounts were corrected. They had gotten flip-flopped in the legislation. SB 123 established full-time career educations as those in 6 weeks in length. This establishes that the shortest half-time career educational program are those that are at least 12 weeks in length. The loan origination fee will be used to offset losses due to defaults in the Memorial Scholarship Loan Program. Those who are participating in the Family Education Program can make payments earlier than required by law. And another provision is that we've moved WAMI into the University of Alaska. This will simplify the budget, budget is currently shown in two budget areas, one in the Department of Education, the other in the university.
Questions? Senator Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I admire the prime sponsor for trying to work so hard on trying to salvage this corporation, which I think is just getting into deeper and deeper trouble ever since we went to bonding back in 1986 or so. But I have just two concerns, and I don't know if these are important things to you or not. They don't seem to be the heart of the bill.
Okay.
But one of them is the transfer of the WICHE and what I believe is the WICHE and WAMI programs over to the university from the Department of Education, which I would rather not see. And the other is the legal counsel. There's a kind of a code word. It's in Section 6. Whenever I hear about public interest, I think of public interest litigation, and we are always funding public interest litigation. And it says that the Attorney General can represent the public interest. Actually, it says it can represent both sides, if I read this right. It represents the corporation and the public interest. But so I have a concern about Section 6 and Section 2. And if you feel strongly about those, then we might have a problem. Otherwise, I'd say let's take them out and move the bill.
I have an idea that is probably something that we picked up from the executive order. And And I can't speak on the public interest phrase.
Would you?
Of my access.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, Senator Rieger, I'd like to, on your other point, the witchy and the whammy, my understanding in the bill, the witchy program is seeing where it's at. It's just being transferred from a commission, I'm sorry, to the corporation. The whammy program is being transferred to the university.
That's not how I understood this program. I think the whammy was in the Department of Education for ongoing funding, except for the first year, which is actually run at the university.
And again, the reasoning behind it was that it is pass-through money, and none of the funding amounts will change. The money will go in, and it's felt like if it's in one line item on the budget, it can be shown exactly what's being spent, and it can't be, oh, that's their responsibility. Oh, no, we need more for this part of it. It's all in one, and it will start in the first year and go through the succeeding years for those who qualify. It's my understanding that the witchy simply moves with the change of the name and is not moving out of
How many students do we have in Witchy now?
I have no idea. I know it's being phased out. My understanding is the Witchy program is being phased out. Is that not the one? Senator Frank might also know also. The Whammy program, I think, I recall, somewhere between 10 and 20.
That's actual slots at University of Washington Medical School.
Maybe 10 slots?
10.
Maybe
10,
wrong.
10 a year.
It's 10.
It's been running at 10 a year. Well, anyway, Mr. Chairman.
A whole bunch of wasted money, I know that.
Those are the two that I have concerns about. I can't imagine that the legal counsel thing is one that's a high priority.
I think what originally began in the legislation was a reference that the commission could hire legal counsel on their own, and there was some clarification on that, and then they came back and said, the Department of Law, the Attorney General, is the counsel for the commission, but at any time they need to, they can hire private legal counsel, and so that language was dropped. But I do not remember the reasoning behind this language.
Mr. Chairman, this section of statute 1442.050, legal counsel for the commission, I believe is deleted in the repealing section. And if you look at, maybe I can read it and compare that to the language that we have here, but I believe it's word for word. It's just taken out of the commission and put into the corporation. But it does say, if in the opinion of the commission, the public interest is not adequately represented by the council in a proceeding, the Attorney General, upon request of the commission, shall represent the public interest.
That's a strange.
A great deal of this bill is renaming what was previously in one section of the law under corporation, and we've renamed it to a commission.
Well, it's the existing law, and it hasn't screwed things up. I guess they don't feel strongly about it.
Yeah.
But I do have a concern about Section 2. And I think the status quo is working. This is one that's been a kind of a football over the years, and I hate to re-rock that boat because things are kind of stable for a while there.
Yeah.
So, what's the administration position on this? Is there quite a bit of difference between the original bill and this one?
Well, as you recall, the original was the executive order. Had the executive order been approved, there would still have needed to have been legislation to repeal those portions that are no longer in effect. They have either dropped out of the federal requirement and therefore aren't passed on to the state, or some state programs that are no longer in effect. Those are all repealed via this bill. The other item was that the administration, I assume, via the way the executive order was written, would have given the seated governor or any governor in the future the right to appoint the board without any legislative confirmation of any of the members, except the commissioner, the two commissioners who are approved via their appointment as commissioners.
Do you want to take up section item 5 on page 2?
Yeah. This is the first year in years that we haven't had budget squabbles over the funding that's witchy and whammy, and I think this is just going to reopen those in the future. I'd rather not have that happen.
Section 5?
Paragraph 5 of section
2. Paragraph 5, line 21 through 28.
I've got a question. A constitutional question. When we change it to a corporation, we've in the past gotten attorney general's opinions that the governing body of corporate boards are not subject to legislative confirmation because they don't fit under the heads of principal department section in the executive article, or under section 26 of the article, because they're not, you know, in section 26 it says when a board or commission is at the head of a principal department, regulatory or quasi-judicial, and it goes on with confirmation. And when we don't confirm the board of the Railroad Corporation, AHFC, ADA, or the other corporations, I'd love to. But I wonder if you didn't, I'm surprised you didn't get an attorney general's opinion questioning confirmation with regard to a corporation.
Mr. Chairman, if I can address that, what we've done is we've spelled out the members of the commission, held them subject to confirmation. The corporation consists of the members of the commission, so we're not actually confirming the members. And this is not unlike the current practice. If you can just briefly look at the little sheet we have here. I've starred the members on the commission and the corporation that are subject to appointment by the governor and confirmation by the legislature. Right now, two members of the corporation are members of the commission, and depending on what type of members they are and what capacity they're serving on the commission, they may or may not be subject to confirmation. But we have discussed this with Department of Law and Legislative Legal. We believe that the wording of the bill is does meet the...
And they think we can get away with that? I would suggest we do that to the Railroad Corporation, the AHFC, and the ADA.
This might be a little window.
And the Permanent Fund Board. With a simple amendment.
Commissions.
Appoint the commission first.
Yes. That's a great idea.
So remove item 5.
Pardon me?
Excuse me, that just gave me some interesting ideas. Senator Rieger.
Mr. Chairman, just for discussion, I'd like to move to delete Section 2 and make whatever conforming amendments are necessary elsewhere in the bill for that deletion, the effect of which would be to not move the out-year WAMI program to the university. And witchy, I think.
Okay, there's a motion to delete Section 2, and it assumes if there's a conforming provision in a repealers or something that's with it, all right? Okay. Are there objections to deleting Section 2? That is the change to when.
But it leaves that as it is, then.
Yeah.
It would remain as it is, then. Sponsor have comments on that? Is that a critical provision?
No, I think there is some interest in the future changing the focus of the WAMI program. And I'm not sure in my review and looking at it that it's doing what was originally intended. I'm not sure it's luring students back here after they've completed their education. And there may need to be some substantive changes to that program in future. And this was an effort to say that if the university thinks this is a really good program, then they should have it under their area of responsibility and keep it all together.
I know it doesn't work. Why would we like to have it work? Further questions on the motion? The motion will be amendment number one. Are there objections? Without objection, amendment number one is adopted, deleting section two and any conforming repealer necessary. Senator Rieger? Oh, you want to move the bill? Senator Rieger.
I move that we report out Senate Bill 301 and the accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Mr. Chairman? Senator Jaro.
At section six that you brought up there where the AG represents, is that?
It was pointed out to me that it was existing law, so even though it seems odd, it hasn't been causing problems, so I decided it's not worth messing with if it's not really changing what the existing law is and it hasn't been a problem.
It's one of the idiosyncrasies of a appointed attorney general system.
Many.
Are there objections to moving the bill? Without objection, the bill is moved from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes. Will be a finance committee substitute because of the deletion. Okay, we'll be back at 8:30 in the morning, and we'll continue with the bill schedule. For today, we are adjourned.